Hello, everybody. We are back. I'm Tom Sosnoff. I'm here with Dylan Radigan. This is Truth or Skepticism, the weekly podcast that has taken over a very small part of the nation by storm.
But it's still taken over and it's still a storm.
It is still a storm. We are pretty close to 10 years into this podcast. I think we're the original. We're the first ever. Something like that. Yeah, we were a podcast before there was a podcast.
And we've become much more efficient. Before, we would go through the burden of incurring all sorts of budgetary costs for Tasty Trade to transport me around the nation and house me. Whereas now we've sort of adapted to this modern technique, more efficient.
Who would have thunk it? Who would have thunk it that it was all this easy? I'm ready this week. Okay. Last week you hit me on a hard topic. Last week I'm ready this week.
I've been contemplating because, as you know, I consider Vecchio really the host, but I panel with Ilya and under Vecchio's leadership in over 4 days a week. And as part of that, frequently we make a short appearance at the end of the trading day with you and Tony. And as you know, Victor Jones is off and running, blazing in the afternoons with his program, The Price of Truth. So there's this sort of afternoon reality that's evolving. That's Tom and Tony, and then Chris and myself and Ilya, and then more Ilya, and then lots of Victor. Sort of an afternoon ensemble, if you will.
Yes, it is.
And it's a variety of personalities, a variety of characteristics, a variety of opinions, all these things. And you took it upon yourself yesterday, I would believe it was, and I've been reflecting on it since, to isolate your attention on both myself and Victor. And you said that, you know, of all the on-air people here at Tasty Trade, the two most public
this is where you're gonna go. Okay.
The two most public of our hosts here, yeah, at this fine institution are you yourself, being me, and Victor Jones.
Yeah.
And so that got me to thinking, you know, as I'm wont to do sometimes when you make a comment that causes me to think, not always, but sometimes. And the undertone of that comment was, in some sense, a derogation, a disparagement, a comment intended to imply a lack of sophistication.
No, nothing to do with lack of sophistication.
Okay, but I whatever. It was intended as a diss in some sense. Okay.
We on Tasty, we like to call it a compusult.
Okay. Wouldn't it be a compusult? What's a compusult?
I don't know, a complisalt.
It would be a complisalt, I would think.
Yes.
By the way, unrelated, would you ever do one of those mixed dog breeds? I know we're both dog fans. You know, when they mix two dogs, they're like, it's a golden doodle.
No.
It's a labradoodle.
No.
It's a bull spaniel.
I don't like Franken dogs, and I don't like Franken food. Like, I don't like Oreos.
Turducken.
Yeah, I don't like any of that stuff. I don't like when you Yeah. No, I don't like it. But I don't like when you mess with like with Oreos and like you try to put like red velvet inside of an Oreo cookie. I don't like all that stuff. It's garbage. It's all a scam.
If you're gonna have a Labrador, you'll have a Labrador. If you're gonna
a Labradoodle, no. I don't like any of those kind of dogs.
And no bull spaniel.
No.
Don't have bulldog, half cocker spaniel.
No.
I met a bull spaniel last time I was in Los Angeles. It's like that dog got like $20,000 or something. I'm telling you that it was out. It's like, because the dog said they have a breathing problem with the flat face, you know? So they threw some spaniel in there to try to work out the respiratory issues. Anyway, back to our program. But I'm gonna reframe my approach through a more Socratic method. When you call Victor and myself public, what do you mean?
It's, have you heard the expression masters of the obvious?
I have.
I mean a little like that.
So in other words, the implication is that the other host at Tasty, the Chris Vecchios, the Ilya Spivaks, the down the list.
No. The other hosts at Tasty are
not masters of the obvious. That we
no, but I'm not. But hold on. I'm you didn't give me a chance to include Vecchio and Ilya Spivak in that group. You, Victor, Ilya, and Chris are all kind of very similar. You're all very public and all a little bit masters of the obvious. Yeah. But those guys, I'm not giving those two guys a pass. I have to spend Sunday nights with Ilya and Tuesday mornings with Vecchio. They are like the most, among the most obvious people in this industry.
Okay. So the public is a version, is a complisult, although I don't know where the compla part is in there. It feels very much like an insult, but, or it feels like it's intended as an insult. I think it's a weak insult, which I'll get to. But there's a real merit in this discussion, though, I think, because your suggestion is that someone who is a master of the obvious is in some ways a sucker, that he is a weak hand in the financial markets because of his or her publicness, that it is a weakness when it comes to trading to be public, is the implication. Or to be subject to be a master of the obvious is a weakness when it comes to trading.
There's a very, because everybody in the world now has essentially access to a ridiculous amount of, like, I feel like when I was growing up, you know, there was a group that read the New York Times and there was a group that didn't. You know, that was how we separated America. Those who read,
I put it more like there was people who picked up the Wall Street Journal on their way to get on a commuter train and those who didn't, but it's the same thing.
But same concept, but in my world growing up, it was those who read the New York Times and those who didn't. That's how you separated America. Like, I'm not saying that's right or wrong or elitist or whatever it is, but that's
those who did read the New York Times were the public in this world and that.
No. Those were just the two choices. There was no public necessarily back then because there wasn't this mass dissemination of information on everything. Now in 2024, you can go and you can talk about something and every person that every person you talk to has in one shape or form or something through one vehicle, through some kind of social media, they have access to the same information that you have and everybody else has on every single topic. And there's basically no stone unturned in 2024. Everybody sees everything because everything is done in, you know, 5-second bits or 10-second bits. And you're able to consume so much more that all information is essentially out there. And now those who repeat that, okay, who repeat that tend to be part of that group that I call public. Especially now as we talk about the world of finance specifically, those who repeat those financial stories that are the same things that you would see on CNBC or Bloomberg or Yahoo or Reuters or whatever else, that tends to fall into the public category. At Tasty,
the public is somebody who's basically regurgitating the financial headlines from the mainstream media.
Exactly. They read it somewhere. Yeah, they took the disseminated information that somebody else wrote, they threw it in a few of their own words, and next thing you know, they have a very similar story with their own little take on it. In the world, the reason we built Tasty was so that individual investors, self-directed individual investors, would have access to information about markets and trading that never existed in a kind of in a public forum before.
And that information was non-public prior, pre-digital, pre-technological.
It was more, it wasn't it's not information, it's not fundamental information in a traditional sense. Like, that's why we don't really cover news or anything like that. It's let's talk strategies. Let's talk about things. Let's talk about being a contrarian. Let's talk about doing the opposite of what everybody else does. And so it was a different approach. Therefore, we felt that made us not public.
So this is very interesting to me. So let's define public for purposes of this discussion as reiterating in some way a pre-existing, widely disseminated point of view or headline.
Of course. And that's now true. That could apply to politics. It could apply to sports. It could apply to anything else. But in our world, you know, the bets are all on finance.
And now let's put the non-public, not through the lens of, you know, better information or inside information or anything like that, but more through the lens of an original thought, an original idea, an original take, an original, or is that not correct?
Or just the opposite. Yeah, that's fine. Or it could just be the opposite. You see, Tasty needs Dylan Radigan. Tasty needs Victor Jones. Tasty needs Chris Vecchio and Ilya Spivak.
We know. Believe me, we know. We know.
Tasty needs all you guys.
We're well aware.
Because we need to know what not to do. like we need to know what the public
very satisfied.
We need to know what the public is thinking so that we can take the opposite side.
Okay. So the premise then becomes, I'm not even going to rise to your little provocations. They're beneath me today. Okay. But your suggestion is that public opinion, public points of view in the markets, only as it relates to the market.
Sure. Only relates to markets.
Is useful information because the public point of view tends to be a good reference point to form a contrarian point of view. If you're a contrarian, you have to be contrary to something. And what are you going to be contrary to? The best thing to be contrary to is a public point of view in this context.
Yeah. You know what's so fascinating about that, Dylan, is that everybody always thought that in the world of finance, specifically finance, that the insiders, meaning the people that knew, the people that know.
The mythological Wall Street
insider. The mythological Wall Street expert, okay, was always this person that knew something that nobody else knew. Do you know what they knew? They only knew that whatever you knew as the, quote, public, the masses, the consumer, all they ever knew is we just want to do the opposite. But they couldn't say that they only wanted to do the opposite. So they had to make it look like they knew something else. But they don't know anything else. There is nothing else to know. So all they really need to know is what is the public thinking. And since we have trained Tasty Nation to be kind of think the same way that we think, we needed to bring in some talent that thinks that they
public voices
that represent, like Dylan Radigan might represent a couple hundred thousand people, a million people. Between you, Ilya, and Victor, there's probably a million people out there that think the way you do. So we're able to bring that into the network. Now we have an opposing side. It's beautiful.
I mean,
it's a genius plan. I shouldn't have let you guys know what we were up to. I should have just let it kept going for the next couple of years.
The four of us are going to go in like the cast of Friends and ask for a raise based on this premise, based now that you've revealed our collective value. But I'm on a different path right now.
Okay.
So the firm that I'm on the same path, but I want to continue down this path. You drinking a beer there?
No, I'm drinking an iced tea.
That looked like a Bulls game, fan beer.
No, this is an iced tea, and I'm testing the iced tea from a coffee shop downstairs in this building that is selling a new kind of tea, and I'm testing it.
You know, speaking of tea, I interviewed a gentleman for Bootstrapping today who makes a coffee that you make like a tea bag that he claims is one of the best coffees. Yeah, like instead of a bag of tea, it's a bag of coffee.
Really? That sounds interesting. Yeah.
And then there's no equipment required, no machine, no press, no bubbler, no boiler, no pod. Anyway, I was actually surprised that it hadn't been done sooner. But again, that's just a slight promotion of a future boot.
But that's also his opinion of his own product. That's not. I mean, that's him.
Are you saying that's very public?
I'm not saying that's public. I'm just saying that that's the inventor of a product is telling you that his product is just as good as everything else that's out there. And you're wondering why it's never done before. And the answer is because you've never tasted that coffee to know that, how good or bad it is. So the firm,
to come back to the issue at hand here, that when I was a reporter in the Bloomberg years, that was thought of as the ultimate sort of version of what you're describing. Like if you're saying Tasty Nation is at its best, lives to take advantage of the being on the other side of the public, whatever that means, and strategically, whatever it is, right? Sure. That's the Tasty Nation at its best, is using a set of conventional strategies, pot odds, to position themselves relative to a public.
I don't think there's a person in the world that would rather be, if they said to you, you could be on the same side as everybody else, or you could be the opposite side. Everybody would choose the opposite side.
And of course, now I'm going to come back to that because there's some issues with that. But
okay.
The firm that was always sort of held out as the ultimate version of the predecessor of the ethos of Tasty Nation was Susquehanna, right?
Okay.
For Susquehanna, and then there are a handful of others where they didn't care what the market was doing. They just cared what everybody else was doing, and what everybody else was doing, they would sell it, right? Which is a classic example of Tom Sosnoff, right?
Every single market making firm in the world does that. That's their entire job. Just take the other side of what anybody else wants to do.
At the same time, as you well know, you could close your eyes the last 10 years and buy any stock, any index, and make a fortune.
Yep, you could.
So the public has never done better.
Yep.
And so I know you reside in the glory years of your days as a prop trader on the other side when you got rich being contrarian. But I would suggest that the public is dominating in performance relative to the prop traders of yore. That to be on the other side of NVIDIA or the other side of Meta, or I mean, I won't list all the names, you know them. I would even argue that your own position trading, which you're very brazen in putting out in public, and you're very, you know, courageous and have been from day one when you started this network, directional. Because the other thing I want to interject here that I haven't brought into this is one of the key characteristics of a public opinion is directional, right? Copper is going up because of the Green Revolution. Whatever's going down because it's, you know, the whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with anything you're saying.
Almost always directional.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah.
And at the same time, I think you would have no problem admitting that your own directional points of view are barely better, if at all, than anybody else's directional points of view. That your greatest success is in your non-directional, strategic, selling, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
blah,
yeah,
blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure.
So what's the, so if public opinion, public opinion is by definition directional, is it possible to have a core characteristic of public is directional. Is it even possible to make money at all with a directional point of view, but for a passive one? Because the chances that you're right statistically with a given directional point of view, everybody knows, are miserable. So you can either be long everything or long nothing. And if you're going to be long nothing, then you really become a true, honest to God, tasty trader, where your pot odds and IVR, mean reversion on the IV, and on and on and on.
But I do believe in positive drift,
which you benefit from by virtue of strategy, though, as opposed to passive. In other words.
Yeah, I know. But when you said, like, why would anybody be long? That's a reason why.
You're saying other than a public opinion.
Right. Sure.
The other thing that I was thinking about, and this is what really occurred to me. Another thing that really occurred to me was, let's just say the implication is the public point of view is an opportunity to exploit, to be contrarian. At the same time, you claim that There is no piece of information that has value because of the efficient market, up to and including the point that you don't care if the politicians have the information ahead of time, even if they make the policy. You don't care. You could give me the Fed decision 5 minutes before it's released, and I wouldn't know how to set up going into the release of that decision. In fact, no one would.
I will go to my last breath believing that, yes. There's nothing you or anybody else could ever say or do that would change my mind about that.
But if that's the case, and like if I accept that one truth, doesn't that then make an opinion that's public or contrarian equally irrelevant and relevant at the same time? In other words, distinguishing between an opinion that's if it's an efficient market.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah. I know. I know. But part of it's not always the actions. It's just like, it's the talk.
It's the attitude.
It's the discussion. It's the topics. Yeah, it's not actually what you're doing so much. Yeah, I'm agreeing that you versus me versus Vecchio versus Ilya versus Victor.
Versus Paul Tudor Jones.
Versus Paul Tudor Jones and anybody else. I don't think anybody is disadvantaged. You know, as long as you understand the nuances of the product that you're trading, nobody is disadvantaged in any kind of a theoretical sense. I think that the term public comes into play for what comes out of your mouth, you know, and all of you guys. I think
it's more of a personality assessment.
It's more of who you are. It's more of like, you know, it's more of how you relate. You know, like I'll get customers that will write in and they'll say, you know, why are these guys on your network?
I think the email says, how on earth did you of all people get lucky enough to get these?
No, that's not what they say. They're like,
I think that's what they're saying.
They're like, we watch Tasty because we don't, this is the stuff we don't want to hear. We can hear this anywhere else. I think that's my whole point.
Uh-huh. And I think that's empirically not true. But anyway, I won't go. So can I tell you what I think public is?
Sure.
In this context? So, because I think public speaks, I don't disagree with your definition, by the way. So I guess this would just be in addition. That public speaks to the nature of the strategy. So in other words, public strategy would be to say, there's a moon landing, I'm going to buy calls on the moon landing company.
No, I don't agree with that.
And that a non-public strategy would say, well, there's a moon landing and I'm going to sell the elevated volatility on the minerals companies. That a less public a point of view, in my opinion, is a more sophisticated interpretation of public information to form a strategy.
No, public is there's a moon landing.
And the moon landing is just a moon landing.
I know that is the public information, because what you're about to say about that moon landing is going to be what everybody else is saying, no matter what. The fact that you brought up the moon landing, that's the public piece. We would never bring up a moon.
Not the trading strategy on the moon landing.
No trading strategy. We would never.
On moon minerals.
No, none of us would ever bring up, like, that's irrelevant. That's secondary. That's only to get over the fact that you're talking about a moon landing.
So you're just offended by the subject selection.
Exactly.
That's the issue.
Right.
Is the subject selection.
Right.
Not the trading strategy.
Exactly.
So it could be a fantastic trading strategy with fantastic results, but if the subject selection is public.
Exactly. So
it's beneath you.
Yes. Do you remember the first time I told you about Tate? Well, I mean, let me go back in the history of Tasty. So one of the original game plans for Tasty, it didn't work out, but one of the things that we wanted to do when we built Tasty, the original plan, the reason I interviewed so many comedians for Tasty is because I felt that all the discussion topics in the world of finance were, to me, just noise. In a different setting, they might not have been idiotic discussions, but with respect to finance, I considered them idiotic because they were nothing more than noise to me. So the original premise behind, or the genesis behind Tasty Trade was we were going to build a digital financial, a digital media network, financial media network that was going to be hosted by six comedians. And the comedians knew nothing about finance. That was the whole thing. They knew nothing about finance. And what it essentially was going to be was that we would feed them different words or situations so that they would effectively improv discussions about things they knew nothing about so that we could come up with actual trade ideas off of completely nonsensical subjects.
I'm a little bit, so give me an example. So let's say, give me an example.
So
hypothetical.
Okay. So I would have six comedians sitting at desks at different times of the day, two, three, four together at a time, but whatever. And I would give them a word like 30-year bonds, the Fed.
Or Iron Condor.
Iron Condor, okay? And they would do simple Second City improv around all these words and or topics that they were just...
You give them a list of 10 words of better that are financial words, terms, or security,
right.
Microsoft, whatever. You could give them company names, and then they could let them go.
And then we would let them go, and they would improv ridiculous stories around those names. And then as they were doing it, and as the names of a strategy got mentioned or an underline got mentioned, we would pop a strategy onto the screen.
It's a real strategy recommended by the pros, as it were.
Exactly.
As a graphic under the comedian.
Because in other words, they would cover like a Fed meeting this afternoon at 2 o'clock the same way or at the same time that CNBC would, but they would do it in a fashion that would have absolutely nothing to do with anything. But the takeaway, which was an actual trade, was more powerful than anything they would do on some other network. And that was the entire genesis behind this. That's why for the last 13 years, we have focused on strategy and probabilistic outcomes and everything else and statistics. And we have not focused one single second on the information, kind of the traditional information behind that. Now, fast forward a little time and, you know, you join Ilya, and we picked up Ilya and Chris. They were abandoned as young children by another network, and we picked them up because we thought that we felt sorry for them. And so we picked them up, took them in, and, you know, we had already done a pretty strong rehabilitation job on you. And then we had Victor Jones, who needed a full rehab. Like, he was in a dark place. And, you know, we had to take him out of the...
He hit rock bottom.
Well, he was at TD Ameritrade for his whole career, 10 years before us. So he had basically, you know, we had to scrape him off the pavement. And we end up bringing... you guys come from a different background. You know, they haven't been seasoned yet. They were working on them. But mm-hmm. in the time... So we figure, how do we squeeze these guys into the network where it doesn't disrupt what we're doing... And yet, at the same time, you know, they're talented people, yourself included. So then we figured out, well, after the market closes, they can't really do any damage. And there's people that, you know, still appreciate. There's some old school new viewers. They appreciate that stuff. And there you go.
So basically, you're saying myself, Chris, Ilya, and Victor are your comedians.
Well, now the roles are reversed. Yes. We've come full circle, but I didn't want you to tell them that because they don't know that yet. Okay.
Well, it's going to be an interesting overtime this afternoon, and you know, not help us with Victor.
Oh, Victor. So, Victor already kind of knows, but he's a little upset. Yeah.
And so again, to kind of tie a ribbon on this, as far as you're concerned, subject selection should be done by virtue of Price Extreme and IVR Extreme and Pod Odds. That those are the filters for subject selection in your non-public universe.
And, you know, there's some contrarian aspect to it. Sure, of course.
And so don't worry about anything else other than price extreme. I'm not trying to corner you even here.
You're not. It's fine.
I'm just trying to understand what you consider the filter.
Price extreme, noise extreme is always interesting to us. You know, like the amount of noise, you know, things like that.
And how do you discount the extraordinary success of the so-called public investor of the last decade?
I mean, the public investor has waited a century for that kind of success. And, you know, they are entitled to a certain, the public investor, you know, looking back for 100 years since the 1920s to the, you know, 2025 or whatever, you know, the public investor has had, you know, only a couple of stretches like this. And the statistics bear out that there are going to be times when the public investor, you know, gets to normalize things a little bit. They get hot. Essentially, the markets reward them for hanging around for a century.
What do you think the chances are that Chris and Victor and Ilya continue to show up for work, and now that you've revealed their purpose as your trained monkeys?
Oh well, I believe that they will have a hard time. They won't accept it at first, and they will fight it, and they will. They will laugh it off, and they will try to challenge me on the concept, and they will, you know, it'll make for good, especially with Victor. He'll go right at me. You know, Ilya and Chris will be a little bit more, they might be a little more discreet, but they'll come at me, which is good, because that makes for good, listen, this makes for good discourse. This makes for... good stuff.
Have you and Ilya had the head-to-head on whether the Fed matters?
Oh, we have. We do a show on Sunday nights.
I'm aware.
Yeah, and so with Victor, it's Victor, Ilya, myself, and Pete Momat. And so yeah, last Sunday night was pretty heated. It was good. I thought it was heated. It was good. You know, like I got all over him, and he got right back in my face. It was good.
I mean, has Ilya made any progress with all of his various citations? Or the Fed's relevance to market?
No, dynamics? he's pretty knee deep in Fed relevance. He has.
No, I know. I'm aware of that. I'm curious whether he's had any impact on you and your obstinance.
No, because he's been trained since he was a baby. He's been hand fed, you know, since he was a puppy, and he's like, you know, so he's got a lot of. It's not something you can't retrain him in a matter of like weeks or months. This is a multi-year project. Yeah, this is multi-year. We get them all, Dylan. We train them. We break them down.
And what's your motivation in training them all? Is this because you feel like by training some in public, that then by proxy you're training the millions for whom those who you choose to train in public are a proxy for the millions that are not here on the network but are represented by?
Well, I also think our viewers appreciate it because I think that it's the only. You know, there are no other discussions like this in all of finance. You know, it's incredibly unique what we do with respect to the way we treat content. And I think that hearing these discussions and watching kind of a little bit of behavior modification unfold in front of their eyes is, you know, it's a little bit of a train wreck, which I think is entertaining.
And do you feel like you have been changed by being exposed to such intelligence as myself and Chris and Victor and Ilya on such a regular basis?
Well, I mean, it's more of a challenge than, you know, than like a Tony Batista or something.
What? This is truth or skepticism has now devolved into Tom insults everyone he works with.
I mean,
I'll throw Scott
in the mix. Who else do you want? I'll throw anybody you want in there.
But Vanetta is your sacred cow if we're going to go down the list.
No. I won't throw her in there because she'll be too tough on me. I won't throw her or Liz or Jenny. I'm scared of them. No, I won't do that.
Girls, you leave the girls alone.
Yeah. I'm not going after Julia. I'm not fighting that battle. I can't win that one.
Well, speaking of which, and this is a good segue for my kicker topic for today,
okay,
which is sports and Caitlin Clark.
Yeah.
And whether Caitlin Clark represents, whether we're at an inflection point, because right now the apparently the whatever the contract or the standard salary for the WNBA is $76,000 a year for the first 4 years. Even if you're, you know, Caitlin Clark, who's arguably the most famous, one of the most famous athletes in the world all of a sudden, and certainly the most famous player in the WNBA.
Yeah.
And now tickets for her games, you know, a WNBA ticket would be $30 typically. Now a Caitlin Clark ticket is $300 or something. It's trading like a true professional sports ticket. Do you have any sense? Are we at an inflection point?
Yeah. Yeah. This is a true transition. You know, she's not the first great woman's basketball player, but she is the transformational moment in women's basketball. I mean, there's no question about it. You know, I think that it's a combination, like you can't, nobody can really explain virality. And Caitlin Clark did something that, you know, nobody else has ever been able to do in the history of women's sports, really, for that matter. And I mean, there's been a couple of athletes like, you know, I mean, just thinking back, there's been, you know, obviously some Olympic athletes like Olga Korbut.
Well, we had Flo Jo was a big one for a second.
A little bit, Flo Jo, Mia Hamm in soccer. I mean,
Megan Rapinoe had a moment.
A little bit.
Pretty political. She was pretty aggressive. She had a very
I mean, there's been some figure skaters over the years, things like that. You know, Peggy Fleming going back just a long way. But
Mary Lou Retton was excited.
A little bit. You know, and but for the most part, nobody's been Caitlin Clark. And, you know, and it's interesting because there's been other white, you know, great white basketball players too. It's not like it's a color thing. She just hit the virality switch that, you know, when she pulled up from the logo and made the three to break the record, that pushed it over the top. That was the moment that she was unstoppable. Like that was.
Oh, but let's be very candid. I mean, and this is true with Magic Johnson. It was true with Larry Bird. And, you know, it's true, obviously, with Michael Jordan. It's not just about the athletic performance. It's an intangible with the personality and the timing of the personality and all these other aspects. Like you could have Magic Johnson's numbers, but without Magic Johnson's smile and attitude, there's no Magic Johnson.
I mean,
Caitlin Clark is a combination.
Yeah. I mean, Steph Curry paved the way for Caitlin Clark, which is amazing. You know, like he'd be the thanks go out to him.
Meaning just to drain it from the outside.
He changed the game. Steph Curry changed the game. And she, you know, she took it to another level in college sports, men or women. Like if there was a men's player that had done that, then I think, you know, it might have been a little different, but there's been no men that have been pulling up with logo threes, you know, and so this just blew people away. And yeah, I mean, listen, it's great for women's sports, and it's great, you know, like, I mean, if you want to, you listen to some of the Bill Burr skits and stuff like that. You know, if you want to make the money, you've got to bring the fans in. And this is what she just did. It. She just changed the entire game. She changed the television contracts. She changed the value of the teams. She changed everything in women's sports. And she changed the money they're going to get, everything.
Well, they're going to pay her $76,000 a year.
Doesn't matter. The next collective bargaining agreement will be 10x of that.
Which brings me to, because one of the things that you've spoken to, and I agree with it, is sort of the ultimate job, if you will, or the ultimate I don't know how to describe it, but the ultimate thing, I guess I'll say, is to own a professional sports team, in the sense of, you know, a lot for a list of reasons, not the least of which total control, can do whatever you want, all these things. And so, have you been thinking about backing Liz, Jenny, Vanetta, Julia, maybe Beth. I'm sure there's more to buy a WNBA team. You know, that you would be the balance sheet, and you can organize your other rich friends. It doesn't have to be all your money.
No.
To back the women of Tasty to buy ourselves a WNBA team. Have you been thinking about that?
No, I have not. Thank you very much, but no, thank you. Cute.
Well, you just said that the franchise value is rising.
Yeah, well, everybody knows that now. Why didn't you think of that before, Caitlin Clark? Because you're public. See, this is the whole problem with you. Like now, like you know.
Now you want to buy a WNBA team. Where were you? Where were you?
Exactly. Like Josh came in here this morning and he said something to me the effect of, see, we should do a marketing deal with the WNBA team. I go, oh, you're just thinking of this now. Like, you know, like, oh yeah, that's it. Now we'll do it. Yeah, they drafted Angel Reese last night. We'll do it now. Like, you know. I love the public ones.
Well, listen, yeah, we've covered that. We only have a couple minutes, and I know you don't love this topic, but I feel like I have to bring it up because it was back in the public headlines today. And in keeping with my public nature, they're voting again on Musk's $56 billion.
Again?
It's up again today. They're resubmitting it.
Okay.
Tesla stock is down again.
Tesla's actually up a little tiny bit, a few pennies.
All right. And I feel like your opinion was in favor of that compensation package when we did like a full podcast. I can't remember I remember you had a strong opinion, but I don't remember what it was.
I was not in favor of $56 billion.
No person at any organization, like in order for an organization to be worth hundreds of billions of dollars, by definition, it can only be created by the collective action of tens of thousands of people with millions of customers.
Nobody's worth $56 billion.
No one person.
Yep. And this is on top of everything else, but no one person.
This is more money.
Yeah, this is more money. Right. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Anyway, I wish you well in your meeting after the close with Vanetta, Beth, Liz, Jenny, Julia, and whoever else, as they bring their list of teams for you to consider buying for them.
Well,
and you can thank and you and once you own the team and you sell it for $56 billion as the numbers go up, you can thank me. You can tip me out on the back end.
Well, I think I've made everybody mad today, which is really a good thing because it fires everybody up. It makes the shows better.
And you even insulted the girls by refusing to buy them an NBA team.
I think they'll live with that.
Which they didn't even know they were going to be insulted. They didn't even know they wanted a WNBA team. When I brought it up.
Very true. I'm Tom Sosnoff. He's Dylan Radigan. This is Truth or Skepticism. Good stuff today, Dylan. Talk to you later. We'll see you next Wednesday, every Wednesday.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.